listener. Hi, and welcome to Broadsheet Around Town. Today, we're talking about letting go of perfectionism when hosting a dinner party. We're also talking about embracing simple and honest flavors and making sure there's always a bottle of wine in the fridge. Why? Because Ellie Boadana, chef at Melbourne's Hope Street Radio, is in the studio today, and we wanted to pick her brain about all the delicious food she eats with friends and family. Ellie's written her first cookbook, which is out next month. It's called Ellie's Table. It's part journal, part advice column, and part recipe book. There's a whole chapter on her famous oily focaccia, the one she makes by hand every single day at Hope Street, and the one she also delivered during Melbourne's lockdowns. It also contains stories about her family's influence on her cooking, including her dad's love of mandarins and her mother's challah bread. Ellie shares tips on how thick we should chop zucchinis, what she stocks in her pantry to make sure every meal is packed with flavor, and a recent meal she hosted with martinis and matzo balls. Hi, Ellie. Thank you for joining us. You've just spent 2 years writing your first cookbook. We're going to dive into the stories and recipes you've shared in there soon, because there's some just really adorable stories and great tips. I want to go right back to when you first knew that you wanted to cook for a living, the moment that you thought, yeah, I'm going to give this a crack. I want to make this my job. I want to do this every day.
I generally never recall I never really have like pinpointed moments of like, yes, this is the thing I want to do. Even with writing the cookbook, kind of like let things like fall and tumble around until they like make sense in my timeline. But I do remember when I was asked to become the head chef at Hope Street before it was like even like existing. And I said no, because I was too nervous about what it would mean to like lead a kitchen. But then after some talking and swaying, I obviously said yes and was so happy. And I think it was like those months of like working so hard on creating and opening the kitchen that I was like, yes, this feels really right. And it's what I want to do.
Let's talk about during Melbourne's lockdown, because that was probably the moment that you really entered into people's lives by delivering food packages to about 200 or so customers, I think it was.
Yeah.
What did you learn from that experience? What were you delivering to their houses?
So I was working in a few kitchens before that, that like ended up closing down during COVID. So I was still like, I love making food and creating things with my hands. And I wanted to keep doing that even while the restaurants were closed and while everyone was at home. So I started making and working on focaccia and fresh pasta. And I'd just recently been to Italy and kind of wanted to like put that into practice. So I started making fresh focaccia and fresh pasta, and was just delivering it at first to like 20 people, like friends. And I put it on my Instagram and I just like let it kind of sit there and see what would happen. And then it just got really, people got really excited about it. And then
it took off.
Yeah. And yeah, it turned the packages into like, it was like a date night energy. So, and it was so like, when I think about it now, it feels so long ago, but yeah, it was like a way for people to sit with people at home and feel like they were in a restaurant, but at home. So they'd like finish off last bits of cooking, but I'd mainly like cook the whole thing. They kind of just had to like, boil the pasta and toss it through the sauce. There was like little antipasto parts and a dessert and focaccia and pasta. It was really fun.
Your focaccia has become kind of famous in its own way. And you've dedicated almost an entire chapter to it in your new cookbook, which is going to be out on the 1st of May. It's called Ellie's Table.
Yes.
It's all about bread and butter, this particular section. And anyone who's eaten at Hope Street Radio, which is where you're the head chef, will know that that's a huge part of your day. You go to the kitchen every day and start preparing and making that focaccia for the following day as well. Talk us through how that process goes for you.
It's the one thing that stayed on the menu the whole time. That's the thing I've made the most in like the last 4 or 5 years probably. But yeah, the day always starts the same. Like it's the first thing that's on the prep list besides bringing in all the vegetables and fruit from outside that's like sitting in the big crates. So we'll bring all that in and then we get out the big white boxes and we start blooming the yeast. I still mix it all by hand. We never got in like a big dough mixer because I really want everyone to feel the dough by hand. In the book, it kind of explains that, like, it maybe it sounds a bit like whimsical or something, but it really is. I really do feel that when you feel the dough with your hands, you get to know it, and you get to know how much water it needs. If you've put too much water, if you haven't put enough, like you get to understand it and know it. And that's kind of what's happened and how I've learnt the process of the focaccia. But yeah, we'll make like huge gastro tins of it and then bake them. We put it in the fridge overnight for like 20 or so hours. And then the next day we let it prove for like another 4 hours out of the fridge and then bake it.
Do you have a secret to making sure that it's kind of fluffy and tall at the size that you want it to be, but also just juicy and oily?
Yeah. So it's got quite a high hydration. So it's a lot more water than you'd expect when you're making it. And also I kind of explained to people that when you're putting the oil into it, it will feel wrong. Like it will feel like you're putting way too much oil, but that means that you're doing it right. It should be a lot of oil, and the oil leads to that crispy bottom, really high heat in the oven, and like all that oil at the bottom, like butter first and then all the oil at the bottom of the tin really produces that crispy crumb at the bottom. A lot of salt. It's like a salty, oily pillow basically. And yeah, there's not really a secret to it. It is quite simple. It's just like getting to know it and, feeling through it.
I love how you talk about it's alive. You're getting to know it as its own personality and kind of responding to the bread in that particular way. I think that's a really beautiful way of sharing what it is that you do every single day at Hope Street Radio.
It is like an alive, literally an alive thing. And yeah, you should get to know the food that you're making and cooking. I think
it's coming up to 3 years, did you say, that you've been working at Hope Street Radio?
Yeah,
in May. So what have you learned in that time?
A lot. Learn how to run a kitchen, and that's a pretty tricky and hard and big thing to do. I really got to learn how to run the pass, how to get food out at the right points, and also like just how to create a menu that like feels good in a certain space. Like I always wanted to be making food for people that felt like they were at like my dinner party, in an environment that felt comfortable, eating food that you like, that feels warm and like cozy and like not over the top. And I think sometimes that, yeah, it's hard to create menus that reflect spaces and like what you want to put out there. So I think that, yeah, that's something I've really tried to hone, is like creating simple menus that feel real and delicious.
A lot of the recipes that you have in this cookbook reflect what you're cooking at Hope Street Radio, but also what you've made with friends and family and partly from your family's history and heritage. Can you tell us a bit about what it is that you've taken from your families, from the different sides of your families, and which dishes mean the most to you from the cookbook?
Yeah. The book is it's such a reflection of my heritage and the way I was brought up around food, and also a mix of the food at the restaurant. It all kind of really informs me, and those recipes inform each other and the book as a whole. So I grew up in, my family is of a mixed Jewish or a blended Jewish background. So my dad's side, they're North African Moroccan Jews, and my mom's side are Eastern European Holocaust surviving Jews. So we have like very different ways of eating, but also a lot of overlap as well. And that is reflected in the book. So, and like the things that overlap are that like my family similar to other, like, similar to it's like in Italy or the Mediterranean, we love sharing food together and like squishing around a table and passing things to each other and having fights at the same time is also loving each other. And there's always food there. Food is like the reason why we come together. I grew up with Friday night Shabbat dinners. We would always, that was like the thing I looked forward to the most during the week. And when I would finish school, it would be like, I'm excited to get home and watch my mum and my grandmother come together and cook. And I would just like watch on, maybe help a little, set the table. But I was always just like watching and kind of like sucking it all up. And yeah, that there are a lot of those dishes that I grew up eating at family dinners in the book. And then the menu at Hope Street and like a lot of other little dishes in the book reflect that in the sense of like, I've kind of tried to turn them into dishes that you can eat at a restaurant. They're like family forward and they're based on tradition and heritage, but you can also elevate them and eat them for a dinner party or at a restaurant. The book has chicken soup with matzo balls in it and North African spicy fish and couscous, but it also has like fresh pasta with broad beans and like a ragu that has like mortadella in the base and prosciutto. Like there's like it's quite an array. Not really an array, but yeah, a mix of things.
I really liked the story. I think it's of your father who was watching his mother make couscous from scratch. Yeah. And just having all of that intergenerational learning through cooking. Yeah. And you also talk about how a lot of cooking within your family has been really intuitive. Mm-hmm. It's not as though they're writing down recipes and sharing it with you. So how did the process of writing the book go for you?
I describe in the book that the women in my family, they keep all the their recipes in their heart and not written on paper. That's very much how I work as well, which can create a lot of chaos and did create a lot of chaos with writing the book, because I would be making recipes and getting really into them and then realizing that I hadn't written anything down, no quantities or whatever. And then I'd have to go back and rewrite and retest. And definitely learned how to create recipes for other people during the process. But yeah, it was a lot of like extracting information from my grandmother and my aunties, sometimes in different languages because they speak Hebrew. And so sometimes I'd be like trying to like quickly jot things down and be like, my grandmother would get angry at me sometimes being like, well, why do you like, how can I give you a quantity? Like, it's not a quantity. It's just like a feeling or like how she knows how to do it. So it was complicated, but I think it's all worked out pretty well. We've tested the recipes and they work now.
Yes. It is about feeling. And I think that the way that you've portrayed that in your book hands it over to people, home cooks, in a way that you're saying, test as you go, taste, mm-hmm. make sure you are thinking about what you're doing and not just following my instructions.
Yeah.
Think you've done a really good job of portraying that to people.
Thank you. Yeah, I want people to feel the recipes, like taste it and add extra lemon juice or extra salt if it needs. Like I have different taste buds to you, so people should do what also feels good to them, but like base it on what they're reading, but also make it feel right to their taste buds.
Was there one dish or one particular snack, because I know you're big on snacks, was there one that you were like, this has to go in the book?
Yes, I'm trying to think. Well, yeah, there's a lot of like little ways to snack with like tinned fish and cured meats and just being able to like, I hope people get from the book that it's important to stack up on that stuff in your house. Like if you find like a nice tin of fish, maybe mackerel or garfish or anchovies, but you don't think you're going to eat it now, that's fine. Just like keep it in your pantry and then someone will turn up your house one day and you're going to want to put out a snack. So you can open the tinned fish and you can get out some bread and toast it and you guys can, that can be like a little snack plate that you make together. So that's definitely something I wanted to include in the book. And another snack that I wanted to be in the book was something really simple, but sliced peaches when they're in season, and really good cheese like fresh mozzarella, and a salty meat like prosciutto, and putting them together, a bit of lemon juice, a bit of salt, a bit of oil. Like, it's so simple, but when you pair it and plate it up beautifully, it's a really nice way to start a meal. A cute way to start a meal is the title of that part of the book.
It's a really beautiful book as well. I know you traveled to Rome and took a photographer with you so that you could photograph some of these dishes as you were putting them together. What did you learn in Rome about a particular dish that you could share with us? I'm thinking of the Roman Jewish style zucchini with mint.
Yeah. I learned a lot. So I went to Rome with Lucia, a friend of mine from New York, and we shot part of the book there and then part of the book in Melbourne as well, like a year later. But I was with that zucchini. I learned a lot about the ancient Jewish community of Rome, and there's still a lot of them that live there now. But something I learned with those zucchinis, so you slice them like kind of thick. I say as thick as like an iPhone.
It's a good reference.
As thick as your iPhone. And then you fry them in olive oil and then leave it to marinate in like with garlic, red wine vinegar, olive oil, any kind of herbs. The Jewish community of Rome would use mint, like wild grown Roman mint. And where I was shooting the book at my friend Alice's place, she had like wild Roman mint growing in the garden. So I would pick that off and bang it with my hands to get all the fragrance coming out of the mint and throw it into the marinade. But I learned that the Jewish community of Rome, they fried a lot of vegetables because firstly with kosher restrictions, you can't eat like squid and seafood and certain meats like pork. So a lot of Italian food is like fried seafood, and Jews can't eat that, but they can eat vegetables. So they would fry vegetables instead. And also because the Jews were relegated to a ghetto as like in a way, yeah, to segregate them from the rest of the Roman community, they didn't have such good access to fresh vegetables. So they'd have like old zucchinis that were withering away. So they'd slice them up, and the way to keep them from going bad would be to fry them hard and fast, and then to leave them in a marinade overnight or for a few hours or whatever, and it would make them keep a lot better. So that's where that dish comes from. And it is so yum to have with like a little slice of pecorino or parmesan, to open up a tin of anchovies with it. Yeah.
I really like how, I guess, a theme for a lot of the things that you've included in your cookbook is that it's simple but delicious, and you shouldn't accept bland food. You should, there's flavor everywhere, and you should really kind of keep hold of some of the things or some of the ways that you're cooking with other foods to then flavor food later. Can you tell me, do you have like a kitchen hack? Or anything that you would share with anyone cooking at home?
In general, I would kind of say that I don't really have any hacks, because I think it's nice to let yourself cook with food slowly and enjoy the process of it. And so often that means like taking your time. And so it's there. I don't really have that many quick kitchen hacks. But what sticks with me from what you said is flavor and keeping the flavor and everything. So if you're like frying, like pan searing the lamb chops from the recipe in my book, I have a way afterwards to keep all the flavor from the pan by like adding wine or stock into the pan and creating like a sauce that you can pour over to keep all the yum flavor that just came out of the lamb cutlets. So like finding flavor in places you wouldn't realize and savoring it for the dish. But otherwise, I think I just like taking my time in the kitchen and pouring a glass of wine. That maybe that's the hack, is pouring a glass of wine and just like relaxing into cooking a meal for people.
If that's your hack, I'm going to do it at home and just say, Ellie told me. What items do you always have in your fridge or pantry at home? And I say this because you've mentioned that these are the heartbeat of the kitchen, the fridge and the pantry.
Yes. So I always have pickled things in my fridge, like pickled radishes or pickled chilies or pickled cucumbers, just because they're like a fun thing to put out if my mum stops by or if her neighbor or my friend stop by to eat something. I'll always put out something like pickled. I always have things to add extra flavor. So like a bottle of soy sauce or ponzu. I love using them to add extra saltiness, but like subtle saltiness to like a dressing or to a marinade. So I always have ponzu in the fridge. Also, Colatura di Alici, which is like a fermented anchovy oil. I always have that in the fridge. Also, that's like an extra little fishy number to put into like a pasta or a marinade as well. And I always have wine in the fridge and stock to add extra flavor. Of course, tinned fish is always in my pantry. And spices like cumin and baharat and really good olive oil. And I also love vinegars, so a good collection of wine vinegars. I could go on. But yeah, the staples are like having really good olive oil, having really good vinegars, having a good selection of tinned fish, of pickles, and of good like bases to add into sauces and marinades like the ponzu and the soy and the colatura.
As you're running through these, it really makes me feel quite ashamed that I don't have half as many ingredients in my pantry ready to go, especially if you're suggesting that friends or family might drop over and you should create them something to eat.
Yeah, just a little snack plate.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking, what would be a little snack plate that you would make right now? Let's say if we were to have this whole conversation at home.
True. So something I forgot to say, I always have tahini in the fridge as well, like tahini paste. And then I'll whip it up with water and lemon juice and salt. So I would probably put together a plate with, I have some leftover bread from the weekend. So I'd grill that and cover it in tahini, cut up some cucumbers probably and dress them in oil and lemon juice and salt. I have a lot of leftover stuff in my fridge for my birthday on the weekend. So what do I have in there? Pickle. It's the same stuff that I just said before, but like pickled things. I have the matbucha, that spicy tomato dip. So I just put like a few little dips on the plate, cover the bread in tahini, and then you can kind of like layer on top of that yourself.
Happy birthday for the weekend. You told me before we started recording that it was your 30th.
Yes.
Did it feel like a milestone birthday for you?
Yeah, it really did. I wasn't expecting that. I feel like, yeah, it was really special weekend and I was kind of dreading it a little bit because not the idea of 30, like I don't mind that. Just, I don't know, I get sometimes nervous about like, I guess, I never used to get nervous about age, and now that it's when I got to 29 and 30, I'm like, oh my God, it's actually a wild, like it's kind of a wild number. And I want to like host people and do something really nice for my birthday, but I don't know what, so I'd get a little bit nervous, but it was such a nice weekend.
What did you eat?
I threw a party for myself and my friends. I had like 40 people over and it was on a Friday night. So in the book, it talks about this as well, but Friday night is when, Jewish people celebrate Shabbat. So I was like, I should lean into that for the birthday. So I did the birthday around like, Shabbat as the theme. And I made a huge pot of chicken soup. So the theme was basically, martinis and matzo balls. And I had someone making martinis and we had heaps of pickles on the table, like gherkins and salted and brined pickles. And then I made a huge pot of chicken soup and some friends came over before the night started and we rolled matzo balls. So it was a big pot of chicken soup, lots of matzo balls. I also made spicy Moroccan fish and we had heaps of challah on the table. So the braided bread. Yeah, it was just actually a huge feast and, yeah, it was delicious and fun.
You've talked about, I think it's your mother's challah in the book, mm-hmm. as something that you wanted to share that recipe. What is it about that bread that you wanted everybody to know about or wanted to share with people?
Yeah, well, that's a bread that is a staple on a Friday night. So you can't really have a Friday night dinner without it. And it just goes with everything on the table. So we put like stacks of plates down the center of the table of different dips and like chicken livers and fish. And then that bread is there to like soak it all up. Yeah. And my mom has been making that for a long time. So like having her eye on the recipe was really important. And yeah, it's just like a really beautiful traditional bread that I feel like couldn't be left out of the book and kind of like goes across many Jewish tables, like from different regions of the world.
You said that you rarely get to spend those Fridays with your family anymore because you kind of work.
Yes.
Do you feel like you're missing out on that part of your life?
Yeah, my parents' only rule growing up was like, please don't miss Friday night dinner. And I was like, don't worry, I never will. And then being a chef, you kind of have to work Friday nights. And I want to work Friday nights because it's like our busiest night of the week and I want to have my eyes on all the food and how the chefs are cooking and everything that's going out. So it's really important to me. But yeah, my family is super understanding and I do really miss it. And I try to take off a Friday night here and there. I really miss it. But yeah, as it's also like just as important to me to be in the kitchen.
Do you think Shabbat and just your family's tradition of getting together and eating has informed the way that you like to host and you like to feed people?
100%. Yeah. I reckon that is where it kind of all started, is seeing it almost seemed like seamless how my mum would get it all together. Like she'd work until 5 p.m. and then she'd still pull out this incredible spread, often like all on her own or with my grandmother. Yeah, and it was always just generous and inviting. And like I saw it in my partner's family's house and just my friends' houses. Like it was always that it was kind of like a thread that went through all of our homes. It was just generosity, having like making extra room for people at the table and making it like a warm environment for anyone to come and eat. And I think that's what I tried to get through in the book, is to be less nervous and strict when having a dinner party and more like just choose like the one or the two things that you're excited about cooking. Cook it because you're excited about it, not because you want to impress someone else with what they like, but cook what you like. And always like have room for people if you're having people over, make it like a warm and generous space and less like numbers heavy. Does that make sense? So it's less like I've only got enough food for six people, kind of like, yeah, make it like an open experience.
I was going to ask you exactly that. What are your tips for hosting a dinner party? Because I know that you've said keeping the menu simple and honest is so important to you, and also letting go of perfectionism, which I think was something that you were saying you are a little bit of a perfectionist.
Yeah. 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 I've learned that I am a huge perfectionist, but like not in a typical way. But yeah, letting go and my tip would be, and the way I've learned to go about it is writing out a menu that makes sense to the night and staying in that lane. Like, although I did grow up with how I grew up watching Shabbat dinner be like really beautiful, it was also stressful seeing how all the mums would make like 25 main dishes for the main course. And I really tried to move away from that idea to rather making the one dish for mains that feels exciting to you and dramatic to your guests. So I think streamline the menu, write it all out before, have your glass of wine, write a prep list and tick it off as you go. That's something I've learned from the kitchen and really like gets my head feeling good and I can enjoy the cooking process a lot more that way. Don't have too many dishes. Just keep it to like the couple of things that you're excited about.
I do love that tip, especially the one where you're basically suggesting kind of think less about the food, you know? which lights are on?
Yeah.
Have you got some music playing? Make sure there's an extra seat at the table for anyone who might want to stop by be generous. Be generous and warm and open to anyone who might want to stop by.
Yeah. I reckon my favorite part of the dinner is like the hour before when I can like go turn on, I wrote this in the book, but like turn on all the lamps in the house, make like a warm, the warm light emitting so that when the guests arrive, they can like see the warm light coming out of the house. Those bits are my favorite part, like getting all the plates out. And seeing what I'm going to lay all the food on. It's less, it sounds weird to say it's less about the food because obviously the food needs to be delicious, but it's about, the warm environment that you create because that is what will stick with people during the night.
So your debut cookbook, mm-hmm. Ellie's Table, is out on the 1st of May. How are you launching it?
yes, 1st of May. Very excited. I'm going to launch it I'm going to be doing a few different events over like May and June, but I'm going to do a big launch party in the Paran market. So it's like my kind of local market, and we're going to turn like one area of it into a little party and have food from the book and really good wine, and I might get my dad to say a story from the book or maybe get him to make up a new story.
Will it be about mandarins? Because I was very into that story.
How good is that? That was one of the first things I wrote that like framed the book. But my dad, he just grew up with really beautiful food and has so many beautiful food stories, so I'd love that to come across in the launch. I'm doing a few things. I'm also going to be going to Sydney and doing a menu takeover at Alberto's Lounge. So I'd love people to come to that, and we'll have the books there as well.
Do you mind sharing that story about how your dad likes to have a little mandarin before bedtime?
Yeah, a familiar sound to me is my dad eating. He'll always eat like a piece of citrus, specifically a mandarin, before bed, always something sweet, and usually a fruit. And so he'll stand by the sink and he'll peel back the mandarin, and it will just like, you can hear him like sucking up the juices and like really enjoying every single segment of the fruit. And it's always just like, when I hear it, I mean, I don't live with them anymore, but sometimes I'm over for dinner and I'll hear him and I'll be there till late and I can hear him doing it. Or when I was a kid, it would just make me be like, oh, I'm going to go downstairs and try and steal a piece, a segment of the fruit from him. And he's always so generous. And he's like, you can have the whole fruit if you want. And I never want to take it all from him because he's enjoying it so much. But when I go to I went to a market a little while ago and saw someone was selling mandarins from their farm, and I bought my dad like a huge basket of them, and we shared them at home together. And I just love the simplicity of that, like how he can really enjoy a piece of fruit, like, and peel back the layers and enjoy each segment of it. And you can hear like the juice slipping out into the sink, and it's just like a very beautiful moment. That is very like close to me.
I like that you included it because it does feel like it's a part journal, and we get to understand you and your family a bit more through all of these recipes, but also all of those stories. Yeah. What do they make of your success?
My parents, sometimes when I was doing those before COVID and during COVID, I would do catering a bit, and then during COVID when I was prepping the meals, my mom was like, what are you doing? Like, this is like madness. The kitchen's a mess. Like, how are you? Like, they were just like shocked and kind of worried for me. and my mom talks about that now, is like, she's like, wow, you've kind of grown so much from that time, and it's all really informed your journey. And I think they're really excited for me, and it's pretty funny that now my mum will like message me asking me for certain recipes that I'm like, I learned that recipe from you learned it from Safta, my grandma, her mum, and now you're asking me, your daughter, for it, like, because I've kind of like played with the recipe and changed it up a little bit, but in its essence, like, it was from her and her family and our families originally. So I think that says a lot. Like, I think she really, I think they love being part of the journey and being in the kitchen with me, and they're always around. Like, even on my birthday, my parents were there and my mum cooked the chicken livers and my dad was doing dishes, and they weren't meant to be there, but the house was such, like, there were so many people in the house and it was chaos, but in the best way, and they were just around and there to help. And yeah, I think that sums up their, like, happiness with me and food. And yeah.
It's really beautiful to see them photographed in the book as well, and just the way that you've shared it with everyone.
Thanks.
What's next for you?
Good question. Like I said at the beginning, that I don't really plan things so much in ahead of time. I kind of like let it fall into place and wobble around until it makes sense. So I don't have such a plan beyond the cookbook, but I think the cookbook will take up a bit of my time with launching it and doing really fun events around its launch. But I'm going to go to New York and try food and hang out and like eat a bit. I'm going to just travel a little bit after the book and get some more inspiration and talk to family more and talk to people. I really like just talking to people who cook and getting their stories and writing them down and learning from them, especially people that are so entwined into my life. So I hope to do more of that and to write more. And I've got a Substack, so I'm really trying to put my head down and write for it. I'm doing that quite often now and putting out more recipes through the Substack and just like day-to-day moments and keeping it as like a little journal, like we were saying before, so that there are like stories there and tips and little recipes and notes for people to just check in on. So I think that's going to be a big part of moving forward as well.
I receive your Substack, and really? I remember recently when you were like, I'm back, or it felt like you had that energy, and now it makes sense. Because you've just spent 2 years writing a cookbook and pouring your heart out into that particular book. So I'm really pleased to have you back in my inbox as well.
Thank you. Yeah. I was silent for a little bit because I was spending most of my time writing the book, like you said, but I'm ready to write more.
It's been such a pleasure getting to know you over this podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's been so nice.